tired of essentially wasting my time at the city council. So I'm actually much more involved with the schools and the school board at this point. So on Wednesday at 6 o'clock, the school board is going to be having a meeting, and they're going to be putting forth a proposal to join in a statewide protest by education folks and school boards and school districts in Sacramento on May 8th, and to support this. And that's being organized by San Francisco, by Mark Sanchez, who is a elected member of the San Francisco School Board and a Green Party guy. So at 6 o'clock at the school board out on Mission, they're going to be putting that proposal on their agenda. And then they're also going to be putting something on their agenda to discuss supporting the retention of funding for a an informational website called EdData that's funded by the state. And so they're going to be putting together a resolution to support that, which is a project that I've been encouraging them to do. So, you know, screw the city council.
And for those who wish to screw it in person, it is meeting at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, day after tomorrow, to discuss capital improvements, or perhaps one say crapital improvements. It's hard to tell what they're doing. I actually have a lengthy interview with Ed Davidson on the redevelopment agency Boondoggles. He's followed their five-year plan, but I think you probably have the right, healthy approach.
The $250,000 that's going to be devoted to subsidizing merchants and building owners downtown who don't want to pay the parking deficiency fees.
That's what this meeting is about on Tuesday?
No, but the redevelopment agent, that's part of the redevelopment agency's boondoggle budget.
I see. Yeah, I guess one of the, I've seen the redevelopment agency running around issuing tickets for chalking or snitching on people to have them arrested for chalking peace signs on the sidewalk or in the street. It just seems to me a strange use of taxpayer money. I guess we've developed a somewhat narrow, rigid merchant perspective on what's acceptable behavior downtown, and it remains for the rest of us to challenge that. You think any of these organizations that we've been talking about might be have any?
Well, the Green Party took a position, against the abuse of the anti-chalking. Then, actually, the ordinance, it doesn't say anything about chalking, but they did take a position against that. SCAN did not take a position on any of those issues because they were not put on the agenda because, you know, there was a limited amount of time and they barely got through with what they were doing anyway. They only meet twice a year.
Well, the problem is, as I said, when you put issues on the SCAN agenda and you even get a majority of people to back them, like the Dolphin League tenants' rights not to be evicted from their hotel rooms until they, that they're living in, not hotel rooms, their residences without some, you know, real place to come back to. They get subverted not just by the city council, which you could expect, but by the SCAN steering committee, Bernice Belton, Nora Hockman, the whole gang of them. There's a lineup of people who are on the SCAN steering committee. And by the way, did they have elections for the SCAN steering committee?
Yes, they did.
And was Bernice Belton and Nora Hockman reelected?
I do not believe that they were on that particular ballot.
Really?
No.
Well, I'm surprised, although perhaps they're tired of that situation. And the reason I point them out is not because of personal animus toward them, though I think, we don't have the best relations, but because they symbolize to me the kind of the old matriarchs of a SCAN that make the decisions regardless of what the majority decide.
Well, you know, the SCAN steering committee at this point consists of, like, nine people, and Bernice Belton and Nora Hockman are two of them, but there's Greg Kindig, who I think you're aware of. He's been working in the Coalition for the Community Commons.
Yep.
He's fairly progressive. There's Robert Pone, who's was the chair of the Parks and Recreation Commission.
Mm-hmm. These are the new people that were elected?
They were already on the SCAN steering committee, and some of them were reelected.
Mm-hmm.
There's Bob Guzley, who's on the Downtown Commission,
mm-hmm.
who is also fairly progressive. There's two other people, Don Gottesman and Wolfgang Rosenberg.
I know him, yeah. big advocate of dump the Dolphin Lee people in favor of the Dolphin Lee project.
Yeah. Then let's see, there's two other people right off the top. There's Sandy Brown. That makes eight so far, right?
Something like that. I mean, the problem that I have with the people you're mentioning, I mean, Sandy Brown is a good example. Here's a woman who was very progressive a few years ago in terms of issues like civil rights for homeless people and the police review board. But as she became increasingly, you know, found herself frustrated with the process, instead of opposing it in a clear and active way, she essentially bought into it, it seems like to me. She took a year and a half to resign from the Citizens Police Review Board. And by the time, you know, by the time she had, we had a situation where, well, a year or two later, it was destroyed completely by the city council.
Mm-hmm.
But she was part of the cabal that closed down the SCAN Housing Committee in 2000 in the fall. She's a part of the group that, as the person who ran the SCAN meetings, she was involved in making sure that the voting happened before the nominations were completed. You know, I mean.
Well, you know, I was not around at that point.
I was. Yeah.
But I do have some thoughts about the voting process. I think it definitely needs to be moved around the agenda, and I think the point is the practice of letting people vote
Thomas,
and leave.
Thomas, the point is that I'm afraid these institutions corrupt the people that get into them.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you that voting and scan should be changed, blah, 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 maybe, if you want to spend all your time working on that kind of stuff. But I have seen what happened when a lot of people got together and we're doing the right thing with a majority of SCAN members supporting it, and people at the center, Bernice Belton and Nora Hockman and Sandy Brown, all helped, you know, shut that down.
Mm-hmm.
And never took responsibility for what they did. You know, I've not been able in a public forum to get them to respond to any of these things. And
mm-hmm.
it troubles me because, you know, I know that Bernice, for example, was a real advocate for the rights of homeless people in the 90s. She called meetings herself to try to get protest after the council abandoned the situation in 1999 before the Homeless Issues Task Force was established in order to just get some protest going with Sherry Connable. I mean, I have a lot of respect for her past work, but I've seen what happens in the middle of these committees, and I just, anyway, so who knows? I hope I'm wrong. We've been talking with Thomas Levitt. Thomas, anything you want to say before we move on?
You can email me at thomas@thomaslevitt.org if you got questions about any of the things that are happening. And there's all sorts of other things going on, too, with the schools and organizations working with the schools where the school board is not quite as ossified in their positions, I believe. They do unfortunate things, but they actually change their minds and reverse the unfortunate things when enough people scream.
Mm-hmm. How about the Iraqi occupation? I mean, now that the Führer has won a great victory in Poland, does that mean everybody's going to go home and work on the school board situation?
No, I think there's plenty of people that are continuing to work on the national situation as well, or the international situation. And, you know, I think the Iraqi people have something to say about this as well. It appears from everything that, you know, I see in the national media and in the alternative media that the Bushies don't quite have a full grasp of what they've gotten into and what the complications of the situation potentially are going to be.
Shiite power, as we say.
That is one aspect of it.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, it may be that the form of the resistance takes is unfortunate and unprogressive.
Yep.
But, you know, those situations are always very complex to, like, you know, understand exactly what's going on. And thanks to our wonderful, you know, federal government and the CIA and the Secret Services mucking around, you can never quite be certain that everything is exactly as what it seems. You know, everyone's fully aware that, for example, CIA has funded all sorts of...
Well, Thomas, you're saying that things have not stopped on this front. I guess I'm wondering if there are any upcoming events around... local protest against the Iraqi occupation. I know there's Peace Friday that probably is happening every week.
Yeah, I think Peace Friday is continuing. I don't know of anything happening right off the top of my head, but I suppose you can just check any of the local calendars, the Resource Center for Nonviolence, the Peace and Justice calendar.
Don't check the Peace and Justice calendar for Huff meetings, because
yes.
Paul Franklin apparently has decided that Huff is an organization that does not deserve to be on that calendar.
Yes.
Thomas, you were able successfully to get that back on the calendar. What's Paul's beef against Huff, do you know?
I have no idea.
Interesting. Well, it's always too bad when people are falling out like this. But hey, we've been talking with Thomas Levitt. Thomas, anything else before we go?
Nope. I actually got to get up and go down to San Lorenzo Park and distribute information.
You can talk to Thomas in person at the Green Party booth down there.
Yes, from 11 to 1 o'clock.
Hey, thanks, Thomas.
All right, bye bye.
Bye bye. And, well, now's your chance, finally, to get in if you want to call in, 427-3772, or if you want to email in, rnorris@hotmail.com. I'm checking that a little less regularly than I might, so if you want to really get on board, you should give a call, 427-3772. Just to kind of tide us over for the moment, here's some tape from the Lockheed protest when there were civilian inspectors who went up there to investigate whether the United States itself, strange rumors were spreading that the U.S. itself had the so-called weapons of mass destruction even in Santa Cruz County. Let's hear a bit about that.
It looks like, gosh, around 100 people circling a table, which is apparently devoted to local weapons inspection. The Lockheed inspection is due to commence soon. Some speakers are speaking. Various flags are raised. Red and white peace flags. There's a green and black peace flag. Green, black, and white. Folks are listening to Peter Lonsdale speak.
Perry has admitted the Public Associated Press reports that the Trident II missile in particular would give the U.S. government the unprecedented capability of threatening and carrying out a strategic first strike involving thousands of large-yield thermonuclear warheads. Such a situation, in which preemptive first strike warfare and sophisticated nuclear arsenals of global mass destruction hang above the heads of the planet's people, will require an unprecedented response in the months and years before us if we are to avert the looming horror by plan, panic, or accident of thermonuclear genocide and unimaginable global devastation. It requires the unprecedented and as yet unrealized, but perhaps still possible decision by many, many people that they must take the same or greater risks for peace that soldiers have for so long taken in battle, that more and more people must be willing to risk and lose their lives in nonviolent civil resistance and direct disarmament against military terror, the killing of civilians, and weapons of mass destruction. As the late Christian peacemaker Philip Berrigan put it in an article over 22 years ago about the Plowshares actions that he and his wife Liz McAllister had undertaken when their own kids were still young, an article called In Defense of the Planet's Children, quote, "Who expects politicians, generals, and bomb makers to disarm? People must disarm the bombs. That is the only way it will happen." Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. The next speaker is Sue Colley. She's a community member and a teacher. She's also an independent researcher who has studied the relationship between Lockheed Martin Missiles and Space Company and the production of weapons of mass destruction.
Okay, thank you. As a community member of Santa Cruz and as a member of WIT and... Okay, as a member of WIT and also as a member of Santa Cruz for some 25 years and a teacher, I wanted to join this group, and together we put together a letter, and this is a letter that's directed to Lockheed Martin here in Bonnie Doon, to the senior manager, dear Mr. Ravenscraft. I'm going to read the letter, and then I'm also going to go over some numbers. The Santa Cruz Civilian Weapons Inspection Team requests that Lockheed Martin offer unfettered access to its Bonny Doon facility to the scientists, technicians, staff, buildings, and records associated with the design, production, testing, and sale of its weapons, weapon components, and weapon subsystems. Since Lockheed Martin is a primary manufacturer of weapons for the U.S. military, we recognize that your company may be engaged in the production of weapons of mass destruction. Since Lockheed Martin is situated in our county, indeed for some of us in our neighborhood, we recognize that it would be irresponsible of us not to request full disclosure of the kinds of weapons, research, production, and testing that are occurring here in our community. We intend to hold the United States government responsible to the same standards for the development, proliferation, and use of weapons of mass destruction to which it holds other sovereign nations. The Bush administration has repeatedly declared that the most dangerous rogue nations are those that, one, have massive stockpiles of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, two, ignore due process at the United Nations, three, refuse to sign and honor international treaties, and four, have come to power through illegitimate means. On the basis of President Bush's guidelines, it is clear that the current U.S. administration poses a great threat to global security. By this government's refusal to sign, reneging on or undermining treaties such as the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, and the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the United States could trigger worldwide nuclear proliferation and increase the likelihood of the unrestricted use of these weapons. Lockheed Martin's work in the research, development, manufacture, and worldwide sales of weapons, specifically nuclear weapons, gives it a central role in that nightmarish eventuality. Therefore, along with access to inspection, we request that you answer the following questions specific to the Bonny Doon facility. What subsystems and components are being developed and are tested? What is their use? Does Lockheed Martin Bonny Doon produce and test ordnance for Trident II D5 nuclear missiles? Is there a Navy building inside the property at Lockheed Martin Bonny Doon? If so, what is its use? If citizens of Santa Cruz were to extend the nuclear free zone to the county, would Lockheed Martin be able to continue current operations in the light of regular inspections? We ask that you provide us with general and contextual information regarding the relationship between the weapons, systems, and components that are produced and tested in Bonny Doon and those designed, produced, and marketed at the Sunnyvale facility. Do the bunker busters, other questions, do the bunker busters manufactured by Lockheed Martin and recently used in Iraq contain radioactive elements? Are the missile components and systems that Lockheed Martin sells globally used in weapons of mass destruction? Are Lockheed Martin missile components and systems being used in combination with radioactive uranium-238, otherwise known as depleted uranium? Are there any nuclear weapons of mass destruction produced at Lockheed Martin? In 1999, Lockheed Martin received $18 billion in government contracts, including $2 billion for nuclear weapons. How much did Lockheed Martin receive in government contracts in fiscal year 2002? Question. What is its projected revenue in government contracts for fiscal year 2003? Since Lockheed Martin is a major supplier of weaponry worldwide, please supply a list of customers and related revenues. We recognize that the United States' non-compliance with UN resolutions and international treaties will result in the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and will pose a greater threat to international peace and security than we have ever known. Therefore, we are obligated to take action and investigate your facility's activities as they relate to the testing and production of weapons of mass destruction occurring in our county. Sincerely, WIT. Now I'm going to go over some numbers. And the first number is one. One tax dollar. One tax dollar can be divided into 6 cents for education, 4 cents for health, and 50 cents for the military. Next number is $850 billion. $850 billion. And that is the cost of worldwide, globally, for defense spending. U.S. share of that, 50%. Iraq share, 0.0015%. That's 2 zeros, 0.0015. The Pentagon is the U.S. biggest company with 5.1 million employees and a budget of $310 billion a year. Lockheed Martin, with a budget of $30 billion in 2001, fiscal year 2001, is the world's largest weapon maker and merchant. Just one F-22 fighter jet, which is one of their Lockheed Martin's popular items right now, costs $160 million a copy. Next number is 32. It comes up a couple times. 32 of Bush appointees are policymakers with financial ties to the arms industry prior to joining the administration. 32, again, we have enough nuclear weapons to kill every person on Earth 32 times. 21 of Bush's appointees have ties to the energy industry. These are in policymaking decisions, positions. Eight current policymakers have direct ties to Lockheed Martin. This includes Bruce Jackson, a vice president who was a founding member, along with Cheney and Rumsfeld, of the Project for the New American Century, and wrote the foreign policy platform for the Republican Party's 2000 campaign, their foreign policy for the 2000 campaign. And then also Lynn Cheney, Dick's wife, sat on the board from 1994 to 2001, and received a $500,000 deferred director's fee during that time period. I have a lot of numbers here. Hiroshima, 13 kiloton weapon. Hiroshima, the bomb over Hiroshima, was a 13 kiloton weapon. A newly developed weapon, the B-611, an earth-penetrating bunker buster, has a from 300 tons to 300 kiloton yield. I have been reading a lot about this in the last couple weeks, and this isn't something I've done in the past. I have a general knowledge, but I've been finding out a lot of facts, a lot of numbers, a lot of figures. And what I find out in discussions of the nuclear policy for today, there are certain words that are repeated over and over again, flexible, strategic, low yield, in talking about nuclear weapons, so that there is a whole new generation of nuclear weapons that are being produced right now that are low yield, meaning they're smaller bombs, meaning that they are bombs that are meant to be used. And blurring the lines between conventional warfare and nuclear warfare. So low-yield nuclear weapons used strategically in a number of different targets around the world. And finally, $4.5 billion, that is the half-life of the radioactive material that we find in Iraq now. Since 1991, the war there, with the depleted uranium, something like a million rounds of depleted uranium were shot out, were used in Iraq, and a third of our tanks wore a depleted uranium armor. Many of those tanks were there for a long period of time. There's now currently tens of thousands of tons of depleted uranium left behind with this 4.5 billion half-life. So, thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Our last speaker is Sharon Delgado, on staff at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
She is a United Methodist minister and has worked extensively on peacemaking and organizing for the nuclear weapons freeze in the 1980s, some of us will remember. Her undergraduate degree is in peace. I see a sign over here. It says, in both Spanish and in English, why are there children in the war? Ask Watsonville first grade students. That's what I want to know. Why are there children in the war? It's because with the kinds of weapons that our country is developing and selling on the open market, there is no way to not have massive civilian deaths and injuries. The Resource Center for Nonviolence and many of the people here, the people in our various peace organizations, support general nuclear disarmament, support the elimination through international law, through international treaties, the elimination of all weapons of mass destruction around the world. The missile defense system, Trident II, other weapons being developed by Lockheed Martin in no way support global disarmament. The Trident II in no way supports deterrence. It is a destabilizing first strike weapon. And all the Tridents together, all the Trident submarines together have the capability of destroying every city on the earth.
And that was the county building speak out by those who eventually became the civilian inspectors later and went up to Lockheed to demand an inspection for weapons of mass destruction where they were denied entrance. Lots of good information there. And I have lots more tape on that, but unfortunately I never got the time to play it all. If anybody actually is interested in this and want access to it, of course, Resource Center for Nonviolence at 423-1626 is one place to go. Another is you can call Huff, and I might be able to get you access to some more of this taped stuff, which I think is very good. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. The first speaker was Peter Lumsdaine, and I apologize for not having the names of the next two speakers. I was running around with my little tape recorder trying to just sort of get in and out. And good information. Check it out. Stuff that we shouldn't forget. I mean, I'm focusing a lot on local stuff, but Lockheed is local. And, of course, it has devastating effects worldwide, and it certainly deserves our attention. I'm now going to turn to the Capitola 13, of whom I am one. Capitola 13 were involved in protesting recruiting at the recruiting center in Capitola. They were arrested there. We were arrested there, I should say, in mid-March. We were charged with trespass, and we showed up on Wednesday at the courthouse because that was the date that we were required to appear to be arraigned. And when we got there, after making various statements on the steps of the county building and being attended by numerous supporters, including, thank you very much, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. A lot of older people took time out of their lives to come on down, some of them disabled, older women particularly, and joined us. And then when we found that the DA's office was not only not going to arraign us that day, but not even give us a date for subsequent arraignment, we all decided to go upstairs to the DA's office, and there were about 30 or 40 of us, and sit down outside the DA's office until we got some action. And this is a kind of a taped series of segments of what happened. It's not edited, so I'm going to kind of spin through some of it, but I think you'll find it interesting and perhaps amusing and maybe even a little educational. This happened on Wednesday, I guess it was April 23rd, around 8:30 or 9. It's also a tribute to People Power, because we got responses as a consequence of showing up and demanding responses.
We could all sit on the floor, I guess, yeah.
All right, so we have about, looks like, 10, 20, 30, 40 people up here in the DA's office. It's 15 to 9 on Wednesday morning, April 23rd. We received word from an inside source that the DA's office somehow wants to demand or continue these charges. We don't want to be here. Perhaps a little gentle singing. We shall overcome someday. Oh.
And this was happening again in the second floor of the county building, in the public area outside the DA's office. And we were doing some singing, which I'm not playing at any great volume because, fine as my voice is, I don't want to embarrass myself too much or the other folks who are singing. But you can catch the gist of it, that it is. Attempt to get public officials to do what they're elected to do, to meet their responsibilities.
And white peace banner. And there's a video photographer is accompanying us with Hunter and other mainstream activists from the community are here as well. Laura Tucker is holding a sign, "War does not bring peace." Yeah, it looks like all the seats. There's even an African-American in attendance. For heaven's sake, Wanda, good to see you.
Nice to see you, Hubbard.
What are you here for?
In support of my friends.
Thank you.
And in protest of the war, also.
Hey, any other songs? I wonder how much this is.
And Joyce is asking how much this costs. People are sitting down on the floor as we await the district attorney. They've had about a month to file charges, perhaps more than a month.
For incidents such as this, for people who really believe in peace and want to have peace to be heard, they have to do something overt, march, get in the way of a juggernaut, try to make their voices heard, because we do not command the media the way the military and the national government do. It's unfortunate, but it's true. It's costly and it's sad. I really appreciate what you all have done. I wasn't able to be there.
I need to make a brief announcement.
Okay.
Happy to have us stay.
This is Attorney Paul Sanford sort of interrupting the proceedings. He is an attorney for one of the clients, but in this case he was sort of acting as a mouthpiece for the district attorney.
They would like us, since we're all good listeners, to basically use a voice that approaches a whisper. So if people want to come in closer and get away from the window, we can stay as long as we want. But they would like us to use very soft voices so that they can...
No, we can stay as long as we want. This is our building.
Passing on the request from the district attorney's office.
Which can be ignored or followed.
I just wanted to say that my husband, Bert Muley, and I just returned from the march in Washington, D.C., the 40,000 people there. There was not a large police present protecting us as we marched down the street. The following day, there was a smaller demonstration in the street to protest the actions of the IMF and the World Bank. There were, I counted, 30 police cars. The lines of policemen were too long to count in front of the IMF building. They were armed to the teeth. There were five different police entities there who were there to protect the IMF, not the marchers, the IMF. There were mounted police, Washington police, etc. And so what I'm saying is the citizens, when they try to say something, have a very difficult time being heard. As just now, we were told, be quiet, please, lower your voices. And that's what they're hoping for. I appreciate your actions. I truly do. Thank you.
Right, and you are.
Identify yourself.
Lois Muley.
Of course. Thank you, Lois.
Yeah. Now, so we can address him.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Stand up.
But whisper.
My name is Alan Fisher, and I'm one of 13 people arrested at the Capitol Armed Services Recruiting Station on March 21st to protest the invasion of Iraq by the U.S. military under direction by the Bush administration. My conscience required me to take this action. My father was a Holocaust survivor who escaped from France in 1941, while other relatives did not survive. My family history makes me acutely aware of the serious danger presented by the regime that is in power in the United States. Arrogant nationalism, sophisticated media propaganda, brutal wars for empire, denial of constitutional and civil rights, political repression, singling out of minorities, in this case immigrants and Arabs, and using the excuse of terrorist threat to frighten the people into compliance are all methods strongly reminiscent of the German Third Reich. It is impossible for me to stand by silently while brutal and unnecessary slaughter and maiming are committed in my name by an undemocratic and unelected administration that represents only the interests of blind corporate greed. The regime that has hijacked our country is moving the world closer to complete corporate fascism and ultimately global destruction as well. The invasion of Iraq was and is illegal, violating the Constitution, the Geneva Conventions, and international law. The refusal of the U.S. government to turn over the administration of Iraq to international oversight further demonstrates the hypocrisy of its stated reasons for the invasion. The U.S. military possesses, threatens, and utilizes the most frightening weapons of mass destruction the world has ever known. It has frequently used weapons of mass destruction throughout the world, and in Iraq refused to consider methods that would minimize civilian deaths and injuries. The use of vast quantities of depleted uranium munitions, which will poison the people and land with radioactive contamination for millennia, and the use of cluster bombs in urban areas are blatant crimes against humanity and have no moral justification. Instead of paying for the vital services we need, health care, education, environmental protection, etc., our tax money is being squandered by a wealthy elite in their drive for world domination. Real patriotism demands standing up for democracy, openness of information, accountability of government, and public participation regardless of personal comfort. Patriotism is not blind jingoism identified with the brutality of might makes right. As Americans, we need to realize both that this aggression is illegitimate and that it will come back to haunt us, both by provoking terrorism and in government repression when we have no choice but to protest for our own rights. Remaining silent will not protect you. Standing up with integrity, accessing accurate information through alternative media sources, and organizing together in community will.
Ruth Hunter.
I think the time has come when the government considers the people its enemy.
I think.
People armed with the truth.
Watch and read about the Patriot Act, too, which isn't out yet, and it's a confidential memo that leaked.
Yeah. Well, domestic, the domestic Security Enhancement Act. It would even allow Ashcroft to deprive a person of a citizenship. American citizen could be deprived of their citizenship under his, if he identified them as some threat.
And I suggest you all go to the libraries and read the notice. It's chilling.
Yeah.
Everything done on the internet.
Yeah.
Everything, every book checked out, everything.
And the librarians are under threat not to disclose to anyone.
We should really honor them. They are shredding every night all the information. Is that they have provided a law which would fine any city employee who goes against the city's
resolution.
Our
city council last night didn't bring up the resolution against the Iraqi war. I mean, come on.
The Santa Cruz City Council last night, after delaying twice, dumped the anti-war resolution and didn't even bring it up for discussion. You know, and, Councilmember Kennedy had a very good resolution, and so did Councilmember Porter. Porter's was okay, Kennedy's was better, and it was dropped. So, someone has suggested to me, and I wonder what people think of this idea, that if we don't get any kind of appropriate response from the DA's office, that a small group of us who can afford to stay here maintain a kind of vigil here through the day and maybe two-hour shifts, which will allow the media to be aware that there is a continuing problem here, not just in terms of the war, which is the problem, but the problem of people trying to, you know, get legitimate process from their local district attorney and their local government, because we're here trying to simply follow the court process. That's why we all came down here today. That's many people skipped work to be here and so forth. This has already been said.
Lawyers
came from far afield, as far away as the Bay Area. So I'm thinking that one way to proceed might be to have a group of five of us stay, or as many of us as want stay, but then have another group kind of spell that group after a couple of hours and be here throughout the day. In order to encourage the district attorney's office to realize that they can't play political games with this particular issue, that it's a very serious issue that we're here for.
Just and for those of us who are in the 13 who cannot stay, it is the county's responsibility to let us know what's going to happen and whether we have to appear here again or not.
I wonder if maybe somebody can go and use someone's office, and maybe we should call the county board, our county board of supervisors, and tell them what's going on. And maybe Marty Wormhout will come down, or some of the other supervisors. You know, because we're citizens of the county, and as you said, this is a county building, and is this harassment or what? I mean, are they taking care of business? No. We have a right to know if they're going to be filing charges and not to be delayed anymore. We've been waiting several weeks.
Are they here? Administration, it's business as usual.
Okay, Emily will go up to the supervisors, tell her there's a lot of people from the various districts here, and we're waiting to be told if there are charges or not. And we'd like them to send a representative down.
I think we need to let the young people know, the ones that we fight the war with, to let them know that by putting their lives on their line, they're not really doing anybody any good. And they think they are. I mean, they go there thinking they're heroes. And I have a really strong feeling about this because my husband was from Tracy, California, went to Vietnam. He was in special forces. He was in the rivers. He was in the jungles. He was exposed to Agent Orange. And 27 years later, he died of lymphoma cancer due to Agent Orange. So I think they need to know that.
You're here. That's the kind of thing that's more important than maintaining a thoroughfare through here. That issue is more important, I think. You want to say something, Lauren?
Keep on walking forward, never turning back, never turning back.
Channel 8 apparently is now sending a reporter here based on this protest here. I just heard an announcement that Channel 8 is sending an additional reporter over here because they've heard there's some sort of incident going on. So get your best singing voices together here. The first arrival of some police officers off to the side. People are beginning to clap with the arrival of men in blue with the billy clubs and badges. There are two of them who have suddenly appeared. They may just be incidental. Uh-oh, Paul Sanford again.
The district attorney's office continues to be more than willing that the group maintain its presence here for however long they choose. But because of we're blocking the elevators and because people are trying to do business legitimately with the county,
you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. FM. This is a tape from the
Winter. The attorney's working on this matter, and I'll leave it to your own personal discretion to determine how you're going to proceed. I'm not trying to direct you, but I'm letting you know that the police are requesting simply that we move about 20 feet over there. Thank you.
And we are requesting that they...
Do we want to make it more convenient for them?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're requesting that they address this issue.
I'd like to say one thing.
Here, hold on for a second. Let me make an announcement real quick.
Uh-oh. Police officer.
Regarding a safety issue that I see right here, is in case of a fire breaks out, this hallway has to be cleared, okay? The other thing is the reception here has to do her business. You guys just have to do it in an organized manner where you guys aren't interfering with other people's lives. So
organizing and interfering with our lives is the problem.
Okay.
So
I can't really address that. All right, but I can't have... Go ahead.
I would like to say that I personally have a problem with blocking this entry with people that are already having a problem with the DA. That's my only...
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Sharon. Absolutely.
I think we should go talk
to the DA.
People
want to move, should move. The others can make their own choice.
I think we should go and very orderly sit in the DA's seats, etc.
Well, you guys could request to the reception.
And what's happening here are three activists. One of them, a member of the Capitola 13, Sharon Delgado, are persuading the crowd to split up and move off to the side, as was requested by the DA. The other advocates of that were Susan Zeman, and it sounds like Paul Sanford is similarly, perhaps unknowingly, lending himself to that particular perspective. I mention this because I don't think it's helpful to break up a group in the middle of a protest. I understand people can have different opinions. But personally, my view was that we got somewhere there because we were a united group doing, essentially, we were allowing people to go up to the receptionist office, and people could walk through a little bit circuitously, but they could get through. I mean, there was no fire danger. It was all essentially horseshit to break up the protest. And the fact that some of us bought it, I didn't like it much, but hey, I'm also a man with just one opinion.
That's the kind of thing that's more important than maintaining a thoroughfare through here. That issue is more important, I think.
Very orderly sit in the DA's seats, etc.
Well, you guys could request to the receptionist here that you guys want to talk to a certain DA, if you guys know his name. And then, okay, you got to understand that he might be handling other court cases, and he might not be readily available. Now, if the DA's office wants to send somebody out, then that's the DA's office. Okay, so I don't have control over the DA's office. But what I'm saying is safety concerns that I see here is the hallway being blocked, elevator access not being allowed, and the hallway being blocked.
That. So what I'm suggesting is for us to go and talk.
So as long as you guys stand up and move around and leave this hallway open, there's no problem.
And officer, I would like to point out that I haven't seen a single one of us blockade anyone. If someone's come up to the front desk, we've politely moved out of the way. If people have been coming in and out of the elevator or getting by, we've made complete access for them.
I came in through that area, and there was no way I could have walked without getting in a few.
People have been walking back and forth all along.
Yeah, but they have
to
go this
statement.
It's got to go this way.
Okay, well, maybe we should
find a better area for you guys.
You know, they're trying to break this up, is what they're trying to do.
So I think we move and let people...
That's fine.
Well, if you move, it loses its impact. But what we can do is we can make clearer passageways.
Yeah, let's just clear. What I'd like to do is just for us to clear a way.
Go ahead.
I just think we should clear a way so that people do have access to the desk and have access to the elevators and can walk through. I don't feel like that we should have to disperse.
Right. So.
Also, the bathrooms are on either side.
Right.
We're going to demonstrate how we can get to the elevator.
Oh, all right.
Thank you.
Nick, I'll join you in a seat here because we may be obstructing the sidewalk. No, obstructing the hallway.
We're obstructing the chair.
Obstructing the DA's pretension that they're proceeding with business in a proper way.
I can't wait to get arrested for obstructing a chair.
Obstructing a chair, yes. They want to split us up, folks. That's what they want to do. They want some people to go one place and some people to go another. That's what they want.
How about
and no one's trying to talk to you right now. There's no reason for me to keep my voice down. That's another bogus complaint.
How about we just mill a lot?
Yeah. I think we should stay here generally, but, you know, make sure people can get to the elevators and make sure people can walk through. It's really simple.
I'm going to the hospital.
Yeah. It looks like the group is at 910 buying the... And I'll come with you. I'm sorry, no attorneys.
I just want to know if that tape was playing when I heard you say something nice about Kennedy.
I'm afraid I know nothing.
Okay, another one.
Why doesn't he come over and... Oh, when we all come to the... Do you want any...
I mean, we're kind of comfortable here. I mean, more comfortable sitting than standing, you know. And we have a rival chorus over there.
We are gentle and we be we're singing.
Off-key voice here. Again, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, a protest on the second floor of the county building on Wednesday in the outside the DA's office, demanding the DA either charge or release the Capitola 13 who come down with their attorneys and their supporters and essentially didn't even find themselves on the court calendar.
Valerie,
the important
there's another incident.
Here.
There's another happening here today, folks. Valerie Corrales is helping medical marijuana people throughout the county, and she wants to say something.
Yeah.
Well, I think that there's a strong correlation between these issues. That one of the things that we're defending is the democratic process and our civil liberties and the right to assemble and the right to free speech and the right to a peaceful world. So,
do you want to say anything about what's coming up with your situation?
Well, at 10 o'clock, we'll be filing against the federal government in conjunction with the city and the county of Santa Cruz. And this is a great honor to be able to represent people who are sick and dying. And so I just came up here to support all of you because my heart's with you. And thank you.
Hey.
Hi, how you doing?
Let's see what Bob has to say. Or is Bob going to... We're going to go to Bob or Bob?
Bob,
I guess we're
going to
go to Bob. Everybody.
I appreciate everyone being here. I do apologize for you being here and not having a court date. What the process is, so everyone knows, is that when people are arrested for crimes, they send it to our office to actually determine what the charges are. And we're still in the determination phase of what these charges should be. We've taken a lot of considerations based on the acts involved, the penal code, the harm assessed, and sometimes, even what appears to be the simplest matters really aren't that simple, and they're very complicated, and we want to make sure that we file, if at all, the most appropriate charges for the acts involved. And so what we're hoping to do is that we're going through that investigation right now. We have two attorneys assigned to this case, and have been assigned to it for about 2 weeks now. And they're going through the penal code and the city code of Capitola, and they're suggesting, if there should be a charge and what the appropriate charge should be. So we're hoping to have that decision made by the end of this week. We just met on this case on Monday again with actually three attorneys from my office, and we are going over what would be appropriate and what would be just. So I do appreciate your patience. Hopefully we'll have that decision made by Monday. And if there is going to be charges filed, what we normally do in cases like this is send a letter to appear. So I guess there's 13 individuals?
Yes.
All those individuals, if you have an attorney, please let us know, because we can send it to your attorney. It's easier. If you don't have an attorney, make sure that you have an address so we can send you a letter to appear. Okay? And we're hoping if there is any charges, it'll be a week from Friday, which will be May 7th. Now, just to bring the attorneys in, just to explain that to them. Is there any attorneys here?
They left.
At this point, are folks being ordered to appear on May 2nd, or are they...
No. Wait for the letter to appear, and that will give the official court date, because sometimes what we have, and we... certain charges appear, sometimes it takes a little bit longer for the muni court staff to process them through. So make sure that the letter to appear will be the same day for all every individual. And if there is charges, you'll get a letter in the mail. So I, what I'm asking right now is if you don't have your attorney here, just leave an address or someone's address to make sure that we can send a letter that quickly gets to you.
You have our addresses, you have our fingerprints, you have our photos. You are now asking us to do a clerical thing, which is your office's
address. And that's fine. If your address is exactly the same,
right.
Believe it or not, some people do move. Some people are in transient status. I wish everybody had a home like you did, but we found out in crime and criminal law that witnesses and people charged with crime sometimes do move, so if you don't have one, I'm not asking to do anything. So, okay.
I've got a question, Bob.
I'm here to answer all brief questions.
Yeah.
I had to
I'm just wondering, you know, you knew last night, you knew for the last week you didn't have charges. Why did you have us all come here?
We didn't know that until yesterday, that the courts didn't actually accept it, so I didn't know until yesterday. So.
Because I called your office twice yesterday requesting a call back because I was meeting with the Capitola 13 at night.
Robert, since I was sick all day yesterday, I guess it'd be difficult to have me. We had probably about five attorneys sick. I was one of them yesterday. So I wish I would have got your call because I would have got back.
Sorry to hear you were sick. I know the other attorneys would be carrying on in your absence.
Barbara Rosario was sick, too. So the two individuals that were actually the person that charged this was all sick yesterday, too. There's a flu bug going around. I hope you don't get it. That's why we don't want to get too close.
Let me get it straight. I came this morning because I was asked to appear, and now I'm supposed to come back and waste another, will it take time off work another morning?
Well,
because you guys haven't figured it out yet?
Well, our job is to do the just thing, and that's correct. It's unfortunate. Right, to make sure that we have the appropriate charge for the appropriate crime and still under investigation right now.
And do we get a copy of the police report seeing that we appeared? Can we get that today?
I'm not sure where Ms. Uzeri is, but I can't make that available to the attorneys. If you have an attorney, I'll make it available to your attorney.
And we're all represented. Those who don't can represent themselves and get a copy of it for that purpose, right?
Well, normally we don't give it to pro per defendants unless they actually say they're pro per in court because their police report could get lost and then the attorney complains that they don't have enough police report and they get another copy. So
we'll probably like to give us a court date now because we can all go into court and get copies of our police report.
Any other questions at all?
Is it possible that the charges will be dropped?
There's lots of possibilities in this case. And that's why we want to take our time, because we don't want to waste your time. So we want to make sure that there is the appropriate charges here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you'll be giving up police reports today.
Yeah, if we also have any questions, please feel free.
Well, when you're considering justice and the fact that everybody came here anticipating, you know, being processed, and then they're not being processed, is that also being considered as part of the justice consideration?
You know, I wish it could be, and I apologize for that. This is not an unusual for police officers to give a date that the district attorneys can't make. This is not that unusual, unfortunately, that we send out lots of letters to appear on a very daily basis. You know, that's what our intake officers do. Sometimes we have crimes that we need to investigate further, which happens in a variety of crimes. Literally, it's happening every single day here, where people get charged with certain crimes and we have to investigate further, because our job is to go one step further to prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt, not just make an arrest.
And so people come here to court and they find that they're not on the list when they've been told to come, and then...
That's correct.
And then they're told, well, you'll be arraigned some other time.
If that is...
They don't even know if there's a warrant out for their arrest or anything.
Well, we tell them to check in with the court all the time. Gina Rodriguez is their intake person. They do check in. Sometimes, as we all know, it takes 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Years in some cases to file charges. In some cases they don't get filed at all. So we try to make that determination as quickly as possible based on the evidence that we have.
Is there a time limitation involved in this?
In your case it's a little bit different. It's not the facts that we're looking at, because we all know the facts. I wasn't there, but you know, I've seen the police reports. What we're looking at is to see what charges are appropriate. And that's a difficult situation to see what charges, if any, are appropriate.
Wouldn't it be appropriate to change the system so that you don't have the police giving out court dates that you can't meet? Because all these people have jobs, and all these people are losing income that all of these people need today. So I'm wondering, wouldn't it be appropriate to change that system so that the DA's office is the one that sends out those dates?
You know, maybe we could tell Susan Morrell that upstairs. I'm always asking for more I'm always asking for more DAs, and if we were out there actually giving the dates out,
I'm not joking. I am deadly serious.
I'm not joking either.
This is a serious issue to people who work worked very hard to pay their rent in this community.
Right. No, I'm not joking either, but reality is that we can't be everywhere, and we're always trying to improve the system, and that's always an issue, and we're trying to do that. Obviously, when computers come about, we can, you know, try to resolve things a little bit quicker, but we're always trying to improve the system, and I wish we can instantly prove that for every defendant.
You said you might consider dropping the charges. Are you getting any pressure from the police or anyone to not do that?
Yeah. No, I told one of the attorneys, we get lots of pressure from lots of different things. Hopefully we're a pressureless office. We're trying to make the right decision for the right reasons.
Seems to me a rather unreasonable length of time, given that this incident occurred, on March 25th?
March 21st.
The question is it unreasonable length of time?
Wait, she's not finished, Bob.
Unreasonable length of time to determine what the appropriate charge would be.
Right.
And you said you had two.
The question is this an unreasonable length of time based on since this happened on March 21st? As I said earlier, some cases you're looking at the evidence, in some cases based on these type of charges, which even though their constitutional rights, people using their constitutional rights, they're a little bit more complicated than you think. When you're dealing with people's rights to try to make the right determination, and you're looking at lots of variety of different charges.
Either we were trespassing or we weren't, Bob. What's the story?
Well, it's not as easy as that. And Robert, I always suggest that people
explain to us. Explain to us how it's more difficult than that.
Well, constitutional rights cases are very difficult. You're looking at a variety. You're looking at a variety of different crimes to see if they meet the necessarily the acts and conduct, and that's what we're looking at right now.
So you've been looked at many times, and they don't make such a great big deal about it. You get arrested,
again, we're not making a big deal about it, but that's up to the individual as well.
Are you reading things like the Nuremberg Judgment and the Geneva Peace Pact and so forth?
Right now we're reading the Capitola Muni Code. That's what we're reading.
Has nothing to do with the constitutional. If you can't make a decision because of constitutional matters, then you should be looking at the Constitution and the Nuremberg Judgment.
The Constitution is involved in the Penal Code and the City Code, and we're looking at it to see whether, you know, the appropriate charges under, as Robert just said, under trespass actually fits. And so that's what we've been looking at. We determined that there might have been one last week, and we looked at it again, and on Monday we had one of our attorneys actually go to the city attorney's office in Santa Cruz, which actually is the city attorney now for Capitola, and we went through the entire Capitola Municipal Code, page by page by page, and then now we're going through the Penal Code right now.
Is there a trespass law in Capitola?
We're just looking to see if anything fits. So,
anything, find something and fit it.
And did you say you'd be a letter?
Drop the charges.
Before you guys leave,
who says we're leaving?
When you decide to leave, if there's no charges, there will also be a letter that will mailed out to you individually. So.
Before May
2nd? Before May 2nd.
So what were you saying earlier about Susan Morello is your supervisor and go to her for what were you saying specifically?
I was actually just joking, but she's a county administrative officer, and she determines how many DAs we have. And, please stay here. Don't go on the fifth floor.
You're
more welcome to stay out here as long as you feel necessary. We're part of the government, too, and the public, and anything you want to voice is fine.
Bob, is there a Capitola trespass law that you found, actually? Does Capitola have a trespass law, having looked through it?
I don't know the answer that Morgan Taylor would, but I don't know.
Maybe you can send him out to talk to us.
Bob, I would like to thank you on behalf of Capitola 13 for making us aware of the situation.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Just
come in and talk to us.
You're welcome. Thank you. If you want to stay here as long as you want. But just, we do have victims' witnesses come through, so if you could just let them come through, that'd be great. Thank you.
Copy the police report.
The charges, they would be appropriate.
Are there 13 police reports or one police report? 13 or one? Bob doesn't want to answer that one.
That's why we have a secretary's day, because they're so valuable. Jeannie says that you can actually, instead of just waiting, you can actually call the DA's office, and we'll let you know exactly what date it is. So anytime you want to do that, you can. It's just the regular number. You just call 411 and call the district attorney's office, and if there's a decision made or a date made to you, you can find out that way. Do a little more.
Yeah, it didn't work. Yeah. Are there 13 reports, Bob, or one report? I mean, is it one kind of multiple report, or is it?
I haven't looked at the reports necessarily.
Could you find out for us? Apparently not. If you can, we'd love to hear that, because there are 13 of us here waiting. So. Certain trains. pranksters here.
Keep hitting that redial.
Yeah. So, Paul, why don't you get one police report and find out what's going on?
Yeah, well, he reports.
And that's what normally would wait on arraignment anyway, so at least this way.
Paul says there are 13 reports coming.
If we use that copier over there, it'll take a little bit less to sell it.
Thank you.
Bob, is it true you can actually raise it to a misdemeanor if you want from an infraction? There is a code section that allows them to...
Under certain crimes, there is, I think it's Penal Code Section 19, which you can raise an infraction to a misdemeanor, but it's only on certain crimes.
Right. The defendant can. Interesting. Thank you.
Couldn't you please provide copies for people that come down here and taken their time? You're saying they have to use the copier, but to hand people their own copies. Okay, good.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
And perhaps that's a bit too much for those who weren't there and who kind of wondering about the arcane details of the law. That actually was the district attorney of Santa Cruz County. Usually very rarefied and insulated. We don't get to talk to him much. He came out, and he dealt with us. Who knows? Maybe he is sympathetic in terms of anti-war sentiments. Maybe he just simply was alarmed at the prospect of 30 or 40 people parked in the hallway singing, and what the media would do with us, considering that we all did show up for our court date, and that he refused. They didn't even have us on the calendar. It seemed like they were giving us the runaround. In fact, they were giving us the runaround. I think what they decided was they didn't want to provide 13 jury trials, and they couldn't find an infraction to try us under. An infraction is a lower crime where you don't have to give a jury trial. So they were just going to make us come back again at another time. And for most people who are working people, that's a great hardship. And for their attorneys, perhaps even a greater hardship, since they're pro bono attorneys and don't want to spend any time in court at all if they can avoid it, unless they're getting paid for it. So as of Friday, I actually hadn't heard one way or the other whether any new charges had been filed. I think I would have been informed had anybody heard of it. It could be they're going to drop all this, particularly since the anti-war movement in the area does seem to be somewhat quiescent at the moment, though with all the statements by Bush and Cheney and company about Syria and Iran and the very real prospect of Shiite fundamentalist rule there, majority rule, the million people in the streets and so forth and the religious pilgrimages. There could be a resurgence of anti-war activism, which, of course, I'd like to see since the U.S. is engaging in an illegal occupation of that country at the current time. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I wanted to get a very quick statement from attorney Kate Wells, who has also been on the forefront of medical marijuana. And we're going to see if we can get her on the phone here.
Hello?
Kate
Hello.
Wells. Are you there? Hey, Kate?
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I can just barely hear you.
How about now?
No.
Let me...
You have to try again.
Let me try again here. Now can you hear me? Hello?
I can't hear you.
How about now? Hello? Hello? Are you there? Kate? Okay. You're going to try again. So bear with us here. We'll give another try to catching Kate Wells and seeing what her thoughts are on this medical marijuana ID system being proposed by Valerie Corral and apparently Marty Wormhout. Kate Wells, are you there?
Yeah?
Can you hear me? A little bit?
Just a little teeny bit I can hear you.
Okay, because I think The listeners can hear us. For some reason, you're having trouble hearing us, or hearing me, I should say. But can you hear me enough to kind of perhaps answer a question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have to keep myself from shouting here because...
Right, yeah, we can hear you quite well.
Okay.
You're coming through loud and clear. Now, you have actually run two medical marijuana clubs in the last decade.
Correction. I was the attorney for one and... as a director for the other.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Okay.
And I mean, you've been intimately involved with the process of providing medical marijuana to people. And you've been, I guess, dismayed when the city zoned you out fundamentally in 2000.
Right.
And I guess a lot of us have been hoping that various medical marijuana providers will pressure the city it was bad enough having the feds go after the corrals. Why should the city go after everybody else?
Right.
But that hasn't happened yet, as far as I know, that you are still, the vast majority of people in Santa Cruz who want medical marijuana can't get it locally. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And, I mean, you know, I still am hearing horror stories for instance, one AIDS patient where they came in and, twice destroyed all of his plants. And this is our lovely sheriff's department under Mark Tracy. He's mortified. He's so mortified that he took a plea bargain, even though he's clearly got a strong medical defense. And he took a plea bargain, and in the plea bargain, the judge designated, as far as his probation, that he could never have any more than 3 plants.
Which judge?
I don't even know that. The person would not divulge any of that information.
Wow.
But it just goes, now the issue here is, now we have judges deciding how much a patient needs.
Well, they're experts in everything. Why not in...
I guess.
Well, you know,
I
you probably read Saturday's story by Janine Harlick, a medical marijuana ID card sought. It's a puff piece for Valerie Corral and Marty Wormhout.
I did.
It also gives a positive in stuff to Mark Tracy, not mentioning that his men are rounding up medical marijuana people, or at least prosecuting some of them and harassing them, and without benefit of any kind of federal pressure whatsoever that we're aware of.
That's right.
But Corral and Wormhout have suggested the ID card solution, which apparently, according to this article, is used in Alameda, Marin, and Mendocino counties. What's
right.
your view on the ID card idea?
Boy, you know, I I have very mixed feelings about it. For one, I'm concerned about having a list in any government agency. Obviously, that's a list that... could be seized by the feds at any time. I'm cynical and distrustful of any governmental agency having a ready list for the feds to just walk in and say, oh, okay, here they are. And
but don't clubs that are existing up in San Francisco and WAM here in Santa Cruz already have such lists, and aren't those lists seizable by the feds if they come barging in anyway?
Well, yeah, but the situation is this. If Santa Cruz had been as vigilant of the rights of their medical marijuana patients as have the counties of Alameda and San Francisco, I would be less concerned. Our county, despite its liberal... veneer inside beats the heart of a right wing fascist, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I know that there's also been this county was one of the first, if not the first county in 1992 to pass a proposition which not only decriminalized medical marijuana locally, but also specified that, quote, this is according to Valerie Corral in the paper, in Measure A required the county health department to help promote medicinal pot use through education, research, and other programs.
Right.
I haven't heard of them doing that at all. Have you?
No, we had one meeting. We had one meeting with public health, and that was the end of it.
What year was that?
Oh, my God. It was back when Scott Imler was involved. So, it was years ago.
Wow. The other thing that it mentions is that this would protect the doctors, because doctors would have their letters of recommendation destroyed, but it wouldn't protect the patients, because patients would be listed. It's kind of interesting there.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't address what I think is an even more urgent situation, and that is leaving the decision to the discretion of either the deputy sheriff or the Santa Cruz cop or Capitola cop, or even to the judge, as to what is a reasonable number of plants to be grown. I think we need some guidelines. And ultimately, I'm hoping that what will happen is that the doctors themselves will draw up some guidelines. or at least prescribe an amount, just like they do with other prescription drugs.
Has that been done in other counties?
Pardon?
Has that been done for marijuana in other counties?
Absolutely, it's been done, where they've set out guidelines so that you are absolutely aware that if you have any more than, you know, 15 plants or at any one stage of the growing, that's too many.
Well, it does say in this article on the Saturday front page of the Sentinel, the cards also would prohibit officers from confiscating marijuana from someone when they think a resident possesses more than is needed to ease his or her symptoms. So
precisely. And when we had a meeting the other day with Valerie and Andrea and Anita and Theodora, the core group of medical marijuana advocates in Santa Cruz, that was our criticism of this proposal, is that it still leaves that discretion to the cop in the field as to what is a reasonable amount.
So in other words, the paper is wrong. It is misquoting this proposal.
Well, of course it is. I mean, you think that the sheriff is going to say, you know, walk into a place where there's, you know, 200 plants and if there's a recommendation, he's going to turn around and walk out? Of course not.
Well, that's true. That's sort of like breaking into Fort Knox and not being able to take the gold.
Yeah. So without some guidelines, as I see it, we're going to have the same problems we've always had, and that is that we have cops on the beat making medical decisions as far as what's a reasonable number of plants to have, and that's not something that should be made there. Maybe county health should come up with some guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, if you're suffering from MS, then, you know, a reasonable number of plants to have would be, you know, 50 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But as I see it, having a card isn't going to make any damn difference if, in fact, the sheriff's deputy decides in his great medical wisdom that you have four more plants than you should have.
Now, do you have any stats, Kate, on whether there's been you mentioned a couple cases of the sheriffs going after local medical marijuana users. Is that a frequent occurrence?
Well, you know, it to me it's frequent if it happens, you know, even it's too many if it happens once.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I can't. I mean, we would have to. Those are statistics I don't have access to.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hear anecdotal evidence that it is continuing to happen.
Now, you've met with WAM. You've met with, I guess, MedX. That's Anita Henry. You've met with the Compassion Flower Inn. That's Andrea. And, of course, Theodora, the Holy Hemp Sisters. In the past, all these folks except Valerie have kind of expressed some concerns about the issue of the city zoning restrictions. Is there a chance now of a broader coalition to change the city's essential ban on all medical marijuana except WAM's medical marijuana?
Well, you know, of course there's a chance. And I think any time that we can stimulate a dialogue with our government about this issue, it's a good thing. So, you know, even if nothing comes of this, it's still a good thing because we're getting people to think in those terms. But I'll tell you, you know, there's a pretty amazing article in of all publications, the Good Times this week, and it's in the news section, and it's called Reefer Madness Redux, by an individual by the name of Silja Talvi, who is a writer for The Nation. And she quotes some statistics here about first of all, there's the new drug czar has they've earmarked $150 million in the anti-marijuana campaign through the Office of National Drug Control Policy for next year. And she talks about, let's see, in 2001, on average, marijuana offenders served more than 3 years in federal prison, but much longer prison terms are being meted out, disrupting and sometimes destroying the lives of most ordinary and otherwise law-abiding Americans. Altogether, nearly 734,000 people were arrested in the United States for a marijuana-related offense in the year 2000, which is the most recent year for which such figures are available. Of those arrests, according to the FBI's Division of Uniform Crime Reports, 88% were for simple possession. I mean, it's an outrage, and so, you know, that's where we've got to concentrate some energy, because
the drug war.
Anyway.
Yeah, you know, Kate, that's the question. The drug war locally is a much broader and I think more all enveloping issue than medical marijuana. We had Bob Lee speaking a few minutes ago to the Capitola 13. But what's the story with D.A. Bob Lee and the drug war? Have you got any indication that things are any better than under Kate Canlis or Danner, or I guess the fellow between Danner and Canlis, who I can never remember?
I don't really have a sense yet as to, I mean, he certainly hasn't come out as a, you know, he hasn't been contacting us to say, gee, let's work together here to, you know, come up with some guidelines. You know, they continue to leave it, as far as I'm concerned, purposely open-ended so that they can use that discretion to do what they want when they want. And it's an outrage. I mean, I've said this before on your show, but right now the way you find out that you have too many plants is that the cop slaps the handcuffs on you and takes you to jail.
What about the drug war generally? Do you think Lee is backing off on that or continuing in the bad old tradition?
I don't know. I mean I really don't have a sense of that yet. I supported Bob Lee and I'm hoping that you know that makes a difference. But you know I don't know now that he's in office whether or not it will make any difference. But like I said, I think that the crucial issue is that we come up with some guidelines. And until we do that, this ID system, even though I support. Probably I support it. I'm still on the fence about it, but I think without the guidelines that any ID program is pretty much useless.
Phone number that people can call if they want to help in the attempt to end the drug war or at least assist medical marijuana patients in getting decent guidelines. You know, the changes necessary to reform the movement.
Well, there's a meeting on April 29th, so if people could. Show up for that meeting and be supportive of not only the idea of an ID card, but the idea of the county setting some guidelines. It would be a great thing.
Where is the meeting and when?
It's at the Board of Supervisors, and as far as I know, it's in the morning. But then you have to follow their agenda. You know, you have to get a hold of them and find out about their agenda ahead of time.
454, I believe. 2400 DA's office. They can
right, April 29th.
April 29th. Thank you, Kate Wells.
Okay.
Appreciate the help.
Bye.
Bye-bye. It's 96.3 that you're listening to, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That was attorney Kate Wells trying to get some justice for medical marijuana patients and broader justice for those harassed for herbal use of any sort, which we've been fighting for decades, as I'm sure many of you out there know. Phone number here is 427-3772 if you want to call in and express your thoughts. We have about 25 minutes left in the show. I got an email earlier this week from students up at UCSC concerned about harassment at Lulu Carpenter's, the coffee shop at the head of the mall across from Jamba Juice and kind of across from the post office. You may remember Lulu Carpenter's was the place where two peace activists, homeless peace activists, actually, one younger woman and a man, were both assaulted by the owner. I believe his name, I need his name in a moment. He threw coffee all over the sign of one man, and he threw cups with coffee at them, kind of down at the woman, and he made comments about not wanting... their kind in his store. These were in two separate incidents when the peace vigil was not in front of his store, but was across Pacific Avenue in front of the Jamba Juice. And again, he was apparently cited for either assault or battery, and I don't know where that case has gone. I'm looking here. His name is Srinath. Manthri Srinath, S-R-I-N-A-T-H. He's the owner and frequent manager of Lulu Carpenters. And this this email from students, from several, I guess they're students. Let's see if I can find the... I had it a moment ago here. Okay, this is a small matter about a little coffee shop at the end of Pacific Avenue. This is what the email reads, named Lulu Carpenters. Three grad students and I went there seeking a quiet place to study and were rudely interrupted by the owner, who declared it a no-study zone after 6 p.m. There weren't any apparent signs up, but he still made us close our books so that the coffee shop can have a trendy, yuppie atmosphere which he desires. I believe in his right as a store owner to require or restrict anything he wants within reason, but the manner in which he requested all this and his arrogant attitude pissed me off enough to write this email. So the moral of the story is, don't buy overpriced coffee at Lulu Carpenters. I recommend not helping bastards like this guy make more money. Of course, this is a small matter compared to other troubles of the world, but it also didn't take much effort for me to write this email. Sorry for wasting your time. True My, T-R-I-E-U, capital M-A-I, physics student. And there's sort of a little background, a little kind of back and forth on that. And some suggestions from another emailer. I don't have 20 years experience dealing with things here, but this guy might be a weak spot in the shopkeeper's armor, and they might be willing to sacrifice him. Some things I could think of: document the incidents, check the status of the assault charge, charge for coffee throwing, perhaps a legal picket. Has the council prohibited a moving picket line yet? Leaflet with comparison prices of better places and the history of incidents. Background check to see what the, make sure all the facts are clear. Someone this prone to violence might have an interesting history. Is Mr. Srinath's food service permit up to date? Is there a record of health inspections? Are city permits noted? Does he pay his workers' compensation? Lulu Carpenters is supposed to be a conversation cafe from on Wednesdays from 6:30 to 7:45 in the evening. Does that still hold? Perhaps the conversation could be turned to him. Various groups meet there. Maybe they can be dissuaded. Same with the musicians. Perhaps find out who grants the franchise and get the victims to complain. Will this guy be provoked to greater violence by any organized protest? Does this fit into a larger strategy? And should the Downtown Association be policing their own? A lot of questions. And a lot of good questions. And I hope I'm not violating any confidences by reading these questions on the air. I think that there are things we need to think about when dealing with abusive businesses that... harass their customers, or harass people who would like to be their customers, or harass members of the public, or harass people that aren't even their customers but are across the street engaging in a peace protest. So that's certainly something to look at and think about. Now, next up is an article that I read on the www.santacruzindymedia website. That's www.santacruz.indymedia.org. which has recently been kind of changed in format, and I think not for the better, kind of for the worse, but it's still a good accessible website to post local stories and also to read about local stuff, like this Lulu Carpenter situation, like the situation with Jason Pascal, the African-American Tarot reader who has been, you know, shipped off to New Hampshire. Thank you, Sergeant Butchie Baker. For a warrant for medical marijuana, it was marijuana, possession of marijuana, allegedly with intent to sell back in 1996, according to Pascal's report. And the story about this can be found on the Internet at www.santacruz.indymedia.org. Just sort of scroll down on the right side of the screen until you find it. So the other story that I'm interested in talking about is a story which Steve Argue has been covering and posted. Let me see if I have it online here. Santa Cruz union leaders arrested without cause. As this writer and many other unionists witnessed on Wednesday, April 9th, two leaders of SEIU Local 250 were arrested by the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department without cause. The arrests occurred as a peaceful and legal union rally was winding down. Participants in the rally were workers at Dominican Hospital who are members of SEIU, Local 250, and their supporters. And we're going to get Steve Argue on the line right now and talk to him about this, so stay with us. Steve Argue.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yeah.
And Steve, I'm reading part of your article here aloud. Arrested were Chief Negotiator Greg Nomaker and Administrative Vice President John Borsos, meaning, according to you, is struggling for a decent contract. The two are obviously targeted for their leadership roles, and the union deputies waded into the crowd. Why don't you tell us what happened, since you were there, I take it?
Yeah, the deputies came, and they didn't explain anything. There were no warnings that were at least to the demonstrators as a group. And
what demonstrators were there, Steve?
I don't know. It was it was about 75 people, I'd guess.
And this was in front of Dominican Hospital. Were they picketing or?
Yeah. Not picketing, but it was a demonstration. We were down by the road, and we made a march up by the hospital. They had circled a couple times earlier before I got there the same way. And the two of the union leaders were just grabbed by the sheriff's department and taken away in handcuffs without saying anything to them.
Did it stop the protest?
No, it didn't. The protest was about to end right at that point anyway, mm-hmm. and it did end. I got a letter from someone who appears to be from law enforcement, and an email saying that this was successful, that it ended the demonstration, but it really didn't end it, because it was right at the time it was going to end anyway.
According to your story, they say in response, workers chanted shame, shame, shame at the arresting officers. One union said, I thought the deputies were good union workers. Another worker replied, obviously they are not. And after seeing the events of the day, peace activist Lou LaFortune said, I think the Dominican guy learned his technique at the George W. Bush School of Effective Negotiation. The two union leaders, you add, were taken to the Santa Cruz County Jail, where they were almost immediately released. Neither one was charged with any crime. Bob Downing went to the county jail to make sure the two were released. Deputies claimed that they had to carry out the arrests due to a complaint for Dominican Hospital for noise, was it?